So our pre-season interviews continue for F1 2012, and now joining me is Sweden's Stefan Johansson on the line from Los Angeles. Stefan, of course, raced in F1 between 1980 and 1991 and picked up 12 podium places. Thanks for joining me, Stefan. First of all, then, how much are you looking forward to this? We've got six world champions on the grid.
Yeah, very much so, of course. I think it's going to be a cracking year again. You know, the quality of the drivers now, I think, is as good as it's been ever, possibly, certainly at the sharp end. You know, there's a lot of great talent there, and of course the next thing is, you know, who's going to get the edge on the technology side this year, and just to follow the whole sort of technology war that's going on in Formula One, and always has done to a degree, I suppose.
Yeah, sure. And obviously we touched on the TV deal where BBC are running 10 races free to air, Sky running all of them but pay-per-view. There's been a lot of upsets about it in the UK. What's your opinion on that?
Yeah, I think at the end of the day it's going to be a good thing. You know, I think they will also reach a broader audience through this. I think they will reach a slightly younger audience, which is, I'm assuming, what they've kind of been looking for as well. So I think overall it's going to be a good thing.
From a British perspective, Lewis Hamilton had a really up and down season last year. First of all, do you think he's capable of putting all that behind him and just getting back to his old self now?
Absolutely, no question. I mean, you know, it's the whole thing with, you know, with the, I mean, it's nuances of just getting the confidence, just having the right feel for the car, just having everything just your way, you know. And I think that's one thing he's, I mean, Jensen was obviously very, very good at figuring that out last year. Mm. And, you know, if you look at any era of racing, and F1 in particular, you know, certain cars suit certain drivers and certain driving styles. Mm. And, you know, obviously I've never driven this car, but it sounds like from most people, you hear sound bites and you talk to people, it seems like that obviously the big trick is to get your head around the tires. And it's not like he was lacking the speed last year. I mean, he's a big spectacularly quick driver, and I think it's just, you know, the year before, the first year, every move he made was the right move. You know, once you make the move and sometimes it doesn't stick, then you have a little bit of doubt in your mind, you know, and it's all it takes. It's all about confidence and just having it all there, you know. If not the quickest, he's certainly, you know, one of the top three drivers, I'd say, in the championship.
Yeah, I was watching a few races back the other day, and it's incredible. I mean, I think he did have some amazing races last year, even though the year seems to have been remembered as a bad one. But he seems to have been affected by things like, you know, splitting up with his girlfriend and all that kind of thing. Can you remember being affected like that by something going on off the track? Affected the way you were driving on the track?
Yeah, I mean, I think it doesn't really affect you once you're in the car, I would say. But I think what more than anything for him, and again, you know, I mean, who am I to say? Because I don't even know him, but yeah. I admire him a great deal. I think he's one of the most, you know, the best thing that's happened to Formula One in a very long time. I think he's spectacular, you know, and seems like a really cool guy. It's just having somebody around you that you can talk to and vent, and somebody that understands what the hell you're talking about.
Yeah, sure.
Which is, you know, it could be an old karting buddy. It could be anybody, but just somebody there that you can sort of, you know, be around and just that has, you know, so it's just not an empty sort of wall at the other end. You know, somebody you can bounce a conversation back and forth with and that have something to contribute, you know?
Yeah, sure. It just seemed like he lost his way a bit, didn't it?
Yeah. You know, the girlfriend issues and all that stuff, I think is blown out of proportion with the media. You know, I don't really think that's a big deal. Because, you know, even if you have death in your family or some very tragic events, you know, once you get in the car, you really don't care about any of that.
Yeah, just like we saw with Michael, isn't it? Imola in 2003 after his mother died, and he still managed to go out there and win the race.
Exactly. You know, if anything, it's sometimes it's almost like a perverse motivator, you know. So I don't think that's got anything. I mean, that's why, you know, I mean, I still race because I love it more than anything else, you know. And just that state of mind you're in when you're in the zone and you're racing, you know, it's just something that you cannot describe and you can't find in any other sort of things you do in life, you know. So I think it's more just getting it right in terms of with the car and just all the other bits and pieces, you know.
And what about Michael Schumacher this year, Stefan? I mean, he hasn't had a podium, obviously, since he returned with Mercedes. If that car's good enough, what do you think he should be expecting to achieve realistically?
I think if he can get the car to his liking, you know, the way he... Because, you know, the thing with Michael is he's got a... When he was fast, like mega fast, he had a car that was absolutely dialed into his style of driving, which is a very, very unique driving style. And nobody, none of his teammates were really able to get a handle on the car. And now he's sort of at the opposite end of that. You know, he can't get the car to where he likes it, whereas it's possibly a little bit more suitable to the style of Rosberg, let's say, you know. But, I mean, he can still drive the car fast, obviously. I mean, it's only, you're only talking about a few tenths. But to get it to where he was dominant, he needs the car to be a very certain way, where it's very, very Asian entry, front absolutely nailed to the floor, you know.
Yeah,
because he can drive it that way, which a lot of drivers can't, you know. But obviously, if you understeer kill speed, I mean, that's just, you know, the fact of what we do, you know. So you always try to get rid of understeer at any cost. And I don't think he can with the current car, you know. And that's, so what happens then is you try a little bit too hard sometimes, you know, and then you go even slower. So it's a kind of a vicious cycle, you know.
Obviously, you know a lot more about this than me. You're a driver, I'm not. But do you know, sometimes we talk about, oh, that car was built for this certain driver, that one wasn't built for this driver. How much does that really make a difference if a car is built around your style? Can you really change it once it's already designed?
Well, I mean, it depends. You know, yes and no, I suppose. I mean, it depends on how far you go. I mean, I think the thing with Michael when he was dominant, you know, they had a very, very exclusive arrangement with Bridgestone.
Yeah, that's true.
So the Bridgestone basically built the tires to what he wanted, you know, and everybody else had to sort of just live with it, basically. Whereas now everybody's on the same tires and it's a controlled tire. So, the question is, can they ever get it to that point, you know, where they had it when he was like mega, mega, mega quick, you know?
Yeah, perhaps it's too competitive now, but we'll soon find out.
Well, it's not just a question of it. Well, that too, but what I'm trying to get to is, you know, the car was so perfectly built for his style of driving.
Primarily
through the tires, you know, which was very, very unique to his style of driving, because he put the effort in. He always made himself available to test. You know, they test night and day, which they can't do now. So, I mean, they were, you know, the amount of testing that went in back then to get the tires developed to his liking, you know. Now when you got, basically you have a controlled tire, I don't think you're ever going to get to that point, you know.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, actually, it's interesting you brought that up, because before 2011, Sebastian Vettel was the only man to actually visit the Pirelli factory and learn how the tire's made, how's it going to respond. It does obviously make a big difference.
Absolutely. I mean, which boggles my mind that he was the only one. I mean, my policy when I was in F1 was always to spend as much time and listen as much as possible to the tire engineers, you know, because it doesn't matter how much time your engineers and everything. I mean, the tire guys, they live and breathe. They're with that every day of the, you know, every minute of the day. So, of course, they're going to have knowledge about it, especially when back then, if you remember, we had three different race tires. So it was critical to, you know, pick the right tire, and not only that, but also how you practiced with the tire, how many laps you put on the tire. Sometimes, you know, on some races you put maybe two or three heat cycles on the tire before the race starts, you know. So I think it's, you know, Vettel's obviously done the right thing, and he's only, you know, I think as far as his development goes, he's only scratching the surface yet.
A little bit further down the field then, the midfield battle. We've still got a Williams seat remaining, and there's so many drivers chasing it, but there's going to be a lot of drivers left out this year. So who would you personally like to see in that Williams seat alongside Maldonado?
I really don't. Does it really matter?
That's true. I suppose at the moment it seems to, doesn't it?
Question. I mean, really, you know, it's that's a bit like, you know, asking, you know, who would I like to see in the Minardi 10 years? Fortunately, you know, it's sad, but it's the reality.
But if you were Rubens Barrichello, would you feel the time, I should go now, this is my moment? It's a bit like Eddie Irvine, isn't it? He was almost pushed out of F1 instead of going himself.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a bit sad, the whole Rubens thing. You know, I mean, I don't know why he's so desperate to stay in Formula One when there's so many other things, categories in racing he could go and do and absolutely love it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you wouldn't want to, I mean, I always said, you know, just, you don't want to do it just for the sake of being there, you know? I mean, there's, I mean, of course he can contribute, but how far is that going to get him? You know, he's been on the sharp end, he's won races. And I mean, that's why I ended up going to America in the end, because I just, you know, what's the point when you start the season and you know, you're going to get a top 10 if you're lucky. And it was, you know, it was a revelation, you know, and I think the same thing would happen to him if he started maybe looking at, you know, Le Mans or even IndyCar racing, or there's a ton of other stuff he could do that is just a lot of fun, you know. So on that note, you know, I think it's a, I mean, it's obviously up to him. He's still doing the job. So it's not like he's, you know, doesn't deserve to be there. I mean, I think he absolutely deserves to be there. He's still getting the job done, but you know, why be so desperate for a car that, you know, I mean, maybe they will also get it together, but even so, you know, they're never going to get it together enough to win races again. I doubt very much.
No, I agree. Sadly, I agree. It's a shame. But, I mean, can you understand the situation for somebody like Adrian Sutil, for example? He's obviously a very quick driver, not necessarily always had the equipment. He must be quite desperate, I imagine, to get that Williams seat.
Yeah, I'm sure he is, you know. But I think there's, you know, duress stuff, certainly. I don't know if he's at the end of the day, you know, he's quick for sure, but is he quick enough to, and or does he have the complete package to be a guy that's going to challenge for the championship eventually? You know, there's sort of the top two or three teams, and then, you know, I mean, to put it fairly bluntly, it's the rest of the clowns that make up the show, you know.
Yeah,
and I sort of have a feeling that he's one of those guys, you know.
Yeah, I spoke with Derek Daly the other day, and he made an interesting point, because he said, it's interesting because we're all, well, not all of us, but a lot of people seem to be considering De Resta as a future champion. But Sutil beat him last year, and he doesn't seem to be considered as a future champion. So maybe it's just all about the image that's presented to us by these teams.
Well, yeah, but I mean, De Resta came in with a bang, didn't he? I mean, you know, you have a few, I mean, like Vettel, when he came in, he immediately, you know, everybody on notice, didn't he? And I think De Resta did to a degree as well, although he sort of faded a bit towards the end of the year. But I mean, he was pretty pretty impressive the first half of the season, wasn't he? You know, straight in, and you know, there's little testing as they can do these days and everything else. So, you know, I would obviously rate De Resta higher than I do Sutil in that respect, you know.
And also racing around all of them, I'll have to mention him, Kimi Raikkonen is back, obviously, after 2 years out. That's interesting. Do you think he can still cut it? Do you think the motivation factor is still something we should talk about?
This whole motivation thing, I think, is, you know, your motive. I mean, if you're in the top three on the timing sheet, your motivation is maximum. It goes pretty quick. You know, I think it's my biggest concern with Kimi is if the team's going to be able to deliver a car for him.
Yeah.
I have no doubt that he won't get the job done. I mean, he's an extremely good driver, and obviously he's an incredibly good racer, which is the other thing. You know, I mean, I think you can count at any time in any type of category, but it's, you know, in Formula One, there's probably less than five guys who really, really knows how to put a race together. And what it takes to put a race together and you know, in a consecutive time over a period of a season to win a championship. And Kimi is clearly one of them, you know. I mean, he's you know, I rate him very, very highly, and I'm sure everybody in the paddock does. You know, he's got a very sort of fluid, very effortless driving style, doesn't he? And I somehow feel may suit this type of car as well.
Yeah, I mean, I really do hope he goes well, because it would be fantastic for everyone, I think. But do you think, obviously we know he's got the speed, he's won races, he's won the championship, he's been runner-up on a further two occasions. Do you think he needs to learn more how to, I don't know, develop the car technically perhaps, or will the speed on its own be enough?
No, I think it's true. I mean, I think he needs to work harder than he has done.
Mm.
than he did, purely to, for his own mind, understand how to get the most out of the car, you know, because that's the battle for everybody, you know, and I think that's going to be the key, you know, for him to really get the most out of the tires, and particularly in qualifying, you know, to squeeze that last sort of half a tenth out of them, you know.
Yeah, no, it's going to be exciting, and Grosjean's had a year on the Pirelli tires already in GP2, so it'll be interesting to see whether he can be ahead of him for a few races. But I'll have to ask you, Stefan, because I'm asking everyone. It's obviously very early into the year, but if you had to predict one driver's champion and one constructor's champion right now, who would you go for?
I'd go for Red Bull and Vettel again.
That's a safe bet, isn't it?
Well, I think it's, you know, for me, I mean, they're on a roll. You know, there's been no changes in the team, really. Vettel is still, you know, I think we're, you know, only scratching the surface, really. He's, what, 20? Come on, you know, he's got another 10 years of getting better every year, basically. So, I mean, as you know, he was just spectacularly good last year. And I think this year is most likely even going to get better, you know. They probably have the best technical setup at the moment. They have a good momentum going, and what seems to be great chemistry in the team. So there's nothing there. There's no snags in that area that's likely to upset the sort of, you know, momentum going forward and just improving a little bit. I mean, the thing is, they only have to improve a little bit, you know, here and there, whereas everybody who's behind always have to kind of do a bit more drastic, you know, and like with McLaren last year, they had, you know, well, everybody sort of takes a gamble on the car.
Yeah.
And as we all know, 9 times out of 10, the gambles rarely work. You know, the whole business is built on hope. So every change you make, everything you do, you hope it's going to be the better one. But, you know, if you don't know it's going to be better, it's most likely not going to get better. Yeah. You know?
But yeah, I guess another thing is as well, the regulations aren't really changing dramatically. So it's just more a continuation of last year's car instead of a really brand new one.
Yeah, exactly.